Well, Frank, first of all, you're very welcome to Terrace Talk. It was great to talk to you. I followed your career when you were running in America, but I never had the pleasure of meeting you. But let us start off by saying that you and I would know a great friend of mine, the late Jimmy Redpath,
yes.
Who was a guard, played football with Kerry, played basketball with Kerry, played hurling with Kerry,
yes.
And played football with Kildare. He was a guard because his father and my father grew up together, and you were married to his sister.
That's, no, his daughter.
Sorry, his daughter, yeah?
Yes, married to Fiona, yeah. So, yeah, Jim unfortunately passed away just 3 or 4 years ago, but great athletes, great time for sports in general. And, you know, when he found out I was a runner, he liked me even more. So it was easier to win over the daughters. But, Jim was probably one of the better athletes out of Kerry, you know, as an underage footballer. He was probably one of the top ones in the county at the time. I think probably a little bit of bad luck, I think, in terms of the senior career. But not just a footballer, but an all-round athlete. He was also a great basketball player. And I think he's gone down in the annals of being one of the better basketball players out of the county itself. So, yeah, great talent.
Yeah, so Frank Conway is Jimmy Redpath's son-in-law. Frank, anyway, listen to me. Delighted to be talking to you. You had a remarkable career. You were only one of two Kerrymen to go under 4 minutes for the mile. Gerry Kiernan was the other one. Talk to us about running sub-4-minute miles and how many did you run and what was your greatest run?
It's, you know, when I suppose I always look at from the perspective of being an underage athlete. You know, when I was 15, 16, one of the big goals at the time was, wouldn't it be great to run a sub-4-minute mile? And when you're 15 or 16, that's going to be a couple of years away unless you're a phenomenon, and there are very few of those. So I followed the traditional path. So, you know, I ran in Killoglan as a school athlete, joined Ivra Athletic Club. And so that kind of career meshed together, winning Munster and All-Ireland titles and all that. So eventually, I mean, getting around to running 4 minutes for the mile, there was bits of frustration along the way. But eventually when it happened, it was a fantastic afternoon in Harvard. You know, there was a great collection of athletes. All of the top athletes, some of the top athletes in the world were lined up. And my coach at the time was a guy by the name of Ray Tracy. And my fastest mile going into Harvard was 4:06 for the mile. I'd run it down in Yale the week before. And Ray and I'd worked out the mathematics of running sub-4-minute mile.
When you say Ray?
Ray Tracy. John's brother was a coach at Providence College. And it was a cold, cold day in Harvard. It must have been about minus 20. So I'm down for a quick jog, quick warm-up. And Ray came over and we worked out the mathematics. It was all mathematics running the mile. We said, look, it's 4 minutes. It's 60 seconds per 400 metres and just a little bit less for the last 400 metres. And I said, Ray, look, I know I'm strong enough to do this. You know, so, but there's some really good athletes in the race, but I had absolutely no fear of these guys. These guys were all world-class athletes. And I remember warming up, getting ready. There was a couple of back rooms, doing some stretches, and I said, I'm ready to run 4 minutes for the mile. Whether I win this race or not, it's irrelevant. So there's a rabbit in the race, a young fella out of Massachusetts, Boston, turned out to be a very good friend of mine. And I said, can you take it out at a relatively okay pace? Run about 1 minute 57 seconds for the first 800 metres. And that was a good clip. So about five of us went with the pace. Everybody else kind of held back. And I took the pace after that. And I just remember thinking, there was a guy from Ballymena, one of the best guys in the world as well, Sean O'Neill. And I said, I know he's going to sit on me. The whole way he's going to sit on me. So I injected some pace in the race itself. But the crowd on the stands was absolutely jumping up and down because they saw something beginning to develop, a good performance, a good race. And it was the race of the day. And we got up with about 400 metres to go, essentially the last lap, two laps to go on the indoor track because it's half the size. And I did another injection of pace and Sean O'Neill came with me. And with about 200 metres to go, Sean edged by and I said, I'm not putting all this work in to have him beat me. I'm going to sit on him. And with 100 metres to go, I just did one final dash and got him. And that was 3:58 for the mile that day. Really good performance, a tactical race. And the next day was fantastic because it was back in Providence. And the Boston Globe had a full page picture of it written by a guy by the name of Joe Concannon, a great sports writer. And it was great on campus because everybody down there, including the girls, all liked the picture. And it was a full page almost, a little bit of the commentary. And page two was written by the whole thing. And Joe Concannon, fair play to him, had a really fascination with Ireland. But I spun a story from him, how he used to train on Duke's Golf Club, train barefoot. He just loved the lyric of it, so they gave us a good spread. And then after that, we had a good relationship with those journalists. And that was the first time I did it, at I think age 21.
So how many sub-format miles did you run, Frank?
It's a good question. I was trying to tot it up. I probably run 15, 16, maybe. I mean, 4 minutes became very easy for me because, you know, that was the level we were at the time. And it wasn't an issue. You know, I was incredibly strong as an athlete. So, you know, running the sub-4 minute mile became much easier. Sometimes we would do it in the metric mile, which was slightly shorter, the 1500 meters. But the mile itself, I think I've run about maybe 15 or 16 sub-format miles over the years.
Amazing, amazing for a great Kerry man. Now I'm going to bring you right back to the very beginning. Tell us about Frank Conway, where he came from, who were his mother and father, where were you born, and where you went to school?
Well, I was born in Killarney, so I've raised, you know, in Kerry all my life. Parents are Tim and Ellen Conway, grew up in Dukes, small farm. My father was a stonemason, so... we did a lot of work with a man in Killarney by the name of Donny Heffernan out of Killarney. So I remember we used to spend summers in there. And the first job I ever went on with my dad was, I think I was 13, he used to teach me the trade at doing work out by the Glen Eagle in Killarney. But the same year I started in the intermediate school in Killoughlin. And that was the first year I think I probably got into sports. I wasn't a GAA player, although some of my brothers played a little bit of it. But my older brother was a real talent. He was a good athlete. He was a Kerry Community Games participant. I think he was medalled in the Community Games in Kerry. But I was the first who came along. And really the reason I got into the sport itself was there was a challenge at the intermediate school in Killoughlin. And there was a great teacher there at the time by the name Brian McCarthy. Really encouraging guy. Got very involved with soccer later on in life. But while I was there... just a very positive force, a kind of guy that would have a conversation with a young athlete and give him great encouragement. We did a trial for the Kerry Colleges cross country. I won the trial in the school, and there was other athletes. I think when you're that age, you think a lot of people, well, they run a little bit, they're probably going to be better. I won that, and then I went on to the Kerry Colleges. I think I medalled in the Kerry Colleges the first year, and that was the first real taste for athletics and competing. And so it worked from there.
Would you say, Frank, would you say that you were born to run?
I think I was blessed with a talent, yeah, absolutely. I think, and that's a big feature in life. You know, if you've got the ability, I think it makes it much easier. But that's only one ingredient, as we learned later in life. You know, there is extreme levels of dedication, commitment to the sport, and you must have a true belief that you can win.
Just deviating, would you have looked up to the Kerry footballers? Kerry footballers, when you were young, would you have admired?
I think, the likes of a Mick O'Connell, the Mick O'Dwyer's, I think unique talents were something I always looked up to. I think, you know, there was something different in those types of athletes. They find a path themselves in life, and I think they find a way of being just extra different, you know, and extra talented, and bringing that talent out, you know. But I always say it's one thing to be born with talent, it's another thing to actually nurture it and develop it and really utilise it and get the best out of yourself. And that's one of the things I would have learned later on to some people who would have encouraged me and taught me a lot about the sport and how to actually fully develop a sport itself.
Now, your school career, you talked to us about, you medalled, you said, in a good few events, but there was one particular one, the steeplechase and a few other events. Talk to us about that, because you set a record when you were a school boy that still stands.
Yeah, the steeplechase. Well, I had, as I began to develop as a young athlete, what I began to do was get more involved with a coach, a Polish guy. He'd left Poland in 1982, come to work in Ireland. And at the time, they had the solidarity issues in Poland. But I think simply he got a good contract in Ireland as well. His name is Zbigniew Oriwal. And Zbigniew was the coach to the 1980 Olympic steeplechase champion, Bronislaw Malinowski. Malinowski was a fantastic technical steeplechaser. And one of the things I learned from Zbigniew Oriwal was the technique of doing the steeplechase. And the steeplechase is a great event for a middle distance runner because it gives you incredible strength. And with strength, you can run any distance because you don't need to kill yourself with speed work all of the time. If you're a very strong athlete, you can run any distance out there. Like Fionnuala Britton at the moment is one of the great Irish athletes in cross country. She's a steeplechaser, incredibly strong individual. So I developed a technique in hurdling. I had a very efficient technique because I'm just about 5'9". I'm not a tall guy, but I had a very efficient, good standard running for the steeplechase. And so it was 1986 when I broke the Irish schools record in steeplechase. I'd been winning the national.
Where was that held?
That was always held at Belfield in Dublin at the time. So the record, I think, at the time had stood for maybe 8 or 9 years. It was a guy from Waterford, Brendan Quinn. His son is now one of the top young athletes in the country at the moment. But Spigenov and I went to Belfield with the sole mission of actually just destroying the record, which we did. And I'd been winning the All-Ireland titles up to that point. You know, I'd won 3 or 4 schools titles. And it was the best competition in the country, because the unique thing about the Irish schools is it brought down the athletes from Northern Ireland as well. One of the problems we always had in Ireland was we had several associations. So the Northern athletes didn't compete with the Southern athletes in the club championships, but they did in the schools. And the schools continues to be one of the best organised, best attended, and best talented sports events in the country. I don't think it always maybe gets the recognition, but that was the elite of the elite in the country. And only the best from each of the provincial championships went forward to run this. And so we set the record. It was a windy day. We had a strategy set out, and it went to plan. You know, it was difficult, I think, in the backstretch, because the wind was blowing quite hard. But the record still stands. And it's become a bit of a laughing joke now with a lot of guys I meet, because one guy I met a couple of weeks ago, he says, oh, I nearly got your record. It was 5:49. I said, no, it's not 5:49. It's 5:45. And he goes, I didn't know that. He says, you know, he says, I didn't realise it was that.
So bad. What year was that, Frank?
That was 1986.
1986. Now, very briefly, Did you give up the steeplechasing then after that? Because you don't seem to appear in the steeplechase scene at all. What happened after that?
Well, after that, it was interesting. What ended up happening is, once you go to the States, and we'll get on to the, you know, when we talk about that, when we talk about that. But one of the things was, I did jointly medal in the All-Ireland 3,000 meter steeplechase 1 year with a guy by the name of Dermot Kerr from Northern Ireland, from Armagh. And we ran 8:55 for the 3,000-metre steeplechase. But after that, you know, one of the points I made was that the steeplechase makes you very, very strong as an athlete. And later on in my career, I began to focus on the mile, and I developed a real penchant for indoor miling. You know, I discovered that I had a particular talent for this area of running. And that's really where I focused on. And so it kind of evolved. I could still run the steeple. You know, while I was in the US, I'd won several regional titles in good times, and they weren't that far off the Olympic qualifying time that I was running. But I was a particularly good indoor 3,000-metre runner, 1,500-metre miler.
Looking back now, Frank, when you did set that record, and it still stands, you must have had a fierce talent for steeplechasing. Do you think that you should have continued on that line?
Yeah, some people argue that. Probably not. I think once you find particular talents, I think talent has to be measured in several different ways. What are you comfortable with? I was particularly comfortable with the steeplechase. I was very good at it from a technical point of view, but I trained very, very hard on the technique side of it. And but Spigenov and I, my coach, would have said, look, you've got to go with where you think the real talent is. And I think my ultimate talent, one of the things that happens with the steeplechase is, once you're under 19, it's only 2,000 metres. Once you move up to over 19 or senior ranks, it moves up to 3,000 metres. And that's a particularly long, difficult race. And I was much better at 3,000 metres miler. I was very strong at that. So, yes, at shorter distances, were we to have a senior level 2,000 metre steeplechase, I think I could be particularly strong at that. But it evolved, and I moved on to something else.
I am waiting to meet the great Jimmy McGee again and say to him, Jimmy, you're the memory man. Name the Kerry man who holds an Irish steeplechase national record since 1983. Can you tell me? We'll see what he says. We'll go for a break. We'll be back shortly. Now, I'm talking to Frank Conway, one of Kerry's greatest ever athletes. Himself and Gerry Kiernan are the only two Kerry men to break the four-minute mile. Frank, Lachlan Murphy of Castlevine has guided a lot of great Kerry lads in the athletic scene in Kerry. He had a big part of playing your life.
Major part, yeah. And Lachlan is one of the true gentlemen of the sport and one of the true giants of the sport. He's always been an encouraging figure. The first time I met Lachlan, Mike Cahill from Glenbey had encouraged me to join a club. And at the time, I suppose in naivety, we all thought, oh, well, I'm not sure if I can afford it. And he says, well, it doesn't cost anything. That's the good news. So Mike's father, Tommy Cahill, God rest his soul, would have said to me, look, the bus is going to be coming from Castlevine going to Coro on a particular Sunday. So there was a lady driving the bus, and she was a very steady and a very fast driver sometimes, Eileen Clifford at the time. She's Eileen O'Driscoll now.
She's married to George Driscoll, the great Kerry footballer.
That's right.
And her daughters played football with Kerry.
That's right. But Eileen was our bus driver, and she would drive us all over the country. So a bus came through Glenbeigh, a good clip, and I said to my father, I think that's the bus gone by there. And he goes, they wouldn't be driving that fast. I think they are. So we chased it all the way to Killoughlin, got to Killoughlin, where Jack O'Foley's petrol stations are now, banged on the window, and I said, are you the running club? And they said, we are. And I said, can I join you? And they said, well, hop in. And I hopped in, and that was the start of it. And the end of the chase and the start of the days with Ivra. And the first question Lorcan asked me, turned around, he was in the front passenger seat, and he said, are you any good? And I said, I don't know. And I think he said, well, we'll give you a trial today anyway. And we went to Coro, and I won the first race there. And he said, you must be a lot better than we thought you were. And that was the start of it. And so the club gave me a platform for access to competition. You know, at the time, Ireland was rife with a split in athletics. There was the NACA, which was 32-county organisation. There's the BLE, which was 26-county organisation. But I joined Ivra because it was a club that was close to home. They've had a good network, and the club has stood the test of time. You know, it is still in existence, and it's in existence because of people like Lorcan. They've nurtured talent, they've encouraged it as best they can, and they've got some good talent out of the club. Patrick Shea is still running extremely well. They've got guys like Christy Reardon, Brendan King. Brendan King's young son now is one of the young rising talents in the sports events, weights events. So it's always been a good access point for athletes. And so Lorcan throughout the years then would have encouraged me. Lorcan would have come to the All-Ireland schools when I was running the records and winning the championships as well as Spignif. So without people like Lorcan, I think the sport would be in a much worse condition, you know. But now we need other people to come into the sport and give encouragement to the athletes and give the type of commitment and the selflessness that was out there with the likes of Lorcan, who had given Sundays and weekends away on sporting events all over the country.
Before you left for Providence College in America, Frank, you were competing all over Ireland, both in cross country and in track, I presume. You would have no idea how many All-Irelands you have won. Could you give a rough guess and what you won?
Oh, God, that's a good
what
question.
Remains in your memory?
Good question. To be honest, you kind of lose track. You know, there are always, like, when you get to a certain level, the All-Ireland titles become just one way of getting to another stage.
And Munsters, of course.
Yeah. Munsters and competing internationally. Yeah. You know, representing Ireland was the next stage up. But the ultimate goal was, you know, always trying to make an Olympic Games or always trying to make European Championship, getting selected for those, getting selected for world indoor titles, outdoor titles. But All-Ireland titles, I would maybe 15 or 20, maybe more.
What about representing Ireland? How many times roughly have you done it, and where did that bring you to?
Different events, you know, in the schools, internationals, I would have competed for Ireland a number of times. Scotland was the first one where I'd fell on the barrier. I tried hurdling for the first time. When I started the steeplechase, that was before, I think that was back in 1982, 83. That was before I really began to develop my technique. There was me and one other athlete from Northern Ireland, really incredibly talented young fellow by the name of Eric Boyd. Eric would have beat me at the under 15 level. And then I began winning over 15 titles. But we went to Scotland one year, Edinburgh, when I was 15, 16, to the Schools International. And I hurdled for the first time. So I ended up coming fourth, even though I fell in the race itself. And then the following year, I don't think I competed with some other competitions. So there was some international competitions in Cumbrian. So it began to elevate from there on. But competing for Ireland, I threw up 10, 15 times, I think. Different levels, different competitions.
During that period of your life, Frank, growing up, what other Kerry athletes were prominent around that particular time? What names come to your mind?
Oh, God, there were so many at the time. You know, there was Brendan King, there was John Shea, there was Patrick Shea, there was the Griffin brothers from Tralee, who were fantastic talents. Yeah. There was John Lenehan. Obviously, there was Gerry Kiernan. There was Kieran Stack from North Kerry. I mean, there was just a rash of athletes. And I didn't always get the chance of competing just because of the split, but in the schools competition, I would have competed against them. There was Stephen Griffin from Tralee, another young athlete at the time. Just some great talent coming out of the county, and all went on to make their own particular marks. There was Maureen Harrington, of course, from Kinmare, who was a great athlete. You know, so there was a lot of talent in the county, a lot of individuals who were capable of All-Ireland medals, of international competition. And I think, you know, I think one of the things is that focus, if we had back at that time, the physiotherapy that we do have now, the care and the coaching technique side of it, which we do have now, you know, I think it would have been amazing to think what else we could have done with it. But Ireland back in the 1980s was a particularly unique country in terms of the number of, the amount of talent that was coming out of the country at international level. It was absolutely fantastic.
What was life like for Frank Conway then off the running track and off the cross country fields? What was life like? You were going to school, you were travelling from, you were living in Dukes, is that right?
I lived in Dukes.
And did you put in a lot of time training, and how did you get on at home? How did your mum and dad take all this?
Oh yeah, I mean, you know, initially when I began training, there was like, we have a small farm, and I used one of the fields really as a training field, and so I developed a technique for running on grass, and it was always 10 minutes in one direction clockwise, 10 minutes counterclockwise. Parents were always very supportive of it. But I think, you know, I kind of did it as my thing. And maybe that's what makes you different. I think, you know, if I hear of other athletes, they will say often that the encouragement must come from the athlete themselves. If it's often too led by the parents. Parents, it's good when they support it, but, you know, they shouldn't live through their children. And so that's the issue. I was one of the athletes who did it myself. I absolutely loved the sport from day one. I think I liked it because I was good at it as well, and so it was easy to be successful. But I trained on the farm, and I trained on Duke's Golf Club. The club were fantastic. They were great supporters.
Did you run barefoot?
No, I trained barefoot for a good couple of years, and you know, there's now a developing train of thought internationally that barefoot people should go back to being barefoot, but it's not always that easy, you know, running in tarmac and running in footpaths. So, you know, but I trained barefoot where possible when I was younger, and it certainly didn't do any harm. You know, I remember one year winning an All-Ireland title barefoot in Killarney at the racecourse. I think I was 17 and I won the under 20 title. And so I jumped ahead of a couple of years. So it didn't hurt, but the club were fantastic. Duke's Golf Club were great as well. They allowed me to use the grounds there, and there was open ground next door where I trained barefoot.
Was the dream there, Frank, of going to the Olympics, and was the dream there of being one of the top athletes in the world, and growing up in Kerry and winning all those titles, were you getting recognition that would be there now with Radio Kerry and with all the different local newspapers? There was only probably the Kerrymen maybe back then, and did you think that you weren't getting recognition, and was the dream there?
No, I never thought I was going to get recognition. I tell you what, the Kerrymen was a fantastic paper. I think the radio station itself, I think, was probably more in its infancy back at that stage. Yeah. But the Kerrymen was a fantastic paper. It always published all the results and gave a great write-up. The Irish Examiner, the Cork Examiner at the time, was great. Brendan Mooney used to always give glowing articles.
And still does.
And still does. Tom O'Riordan was fantastic, always gave great support. I would think even back then that there was probably even more support for the sport. And I think what was encouraging a couple of weeks ago was that RTÉ had given great coverage of the under-23s, yeah, who ran very well down in Portugal. But no, I would say back in my day, you know, at a certain age, I dared to dream certain things, you know, when I was 15 or 16. And then when I was met Ari Wall and got encouragement from the likes of Lorcan Murphy, Jerry Horgan and Clarkin, Mike Cattle and Ross Bay, you know, people who believe. And the belief in somebody, it's amazing what it does. You know, I think when you see somebody believes in you, you go from daring to dream to daring to believe. Yeah. And I found that once I got to college in the States, already by that stage, I would believe that I would win. You know, and it was different, and it wasn't, and I don't believe it was ever an arrogant thing, yeah, but it was always that different belief in your mind that you can be very, you know, you can be down to earth about it, but at the same token, you need to go into a race to know that you are as good as the next athlete. And, you know, you may have an off day, but, you know, and I'll talk a little bit later about this, but I never got into a race where I believed that anybody was much better than me. I always knew, and the likes of Ari was very scientific, but he was, I think once you found that he believed in you, it gave you that extra stimulus.
Just before we go for a break, you mentioned your family and growing up here in Dukes. How many were in the family and who were there, Frank?
Oh, 9 in the family. I mean, 3 have passed on since, you know.
To talk to spoken.
Oh, the eldest was Joseph. Joseph had was the eldest in the family. Then there was Morris, who lived in London. Tim lives in London now. He's got a family there. Mary lives in Kerry. There's myself. There's my sister Eileen. John lives in Dublin, and then Pat lives down in Cork. And there was the youngest, Paul, who had died, unfortunately, very, very young. He'd contracted, I think it was meningitis at the time, which is ironic because of my own later development later on. Yeah. He was only 5 months at the time.
Yeah. Well, when we come back, we're going to travel all the way to America, over to Providence College, where Frank really began to hit the headlines. So stay with us. We'll be back shortly. I'm talking to Frank Conway, outstanding Kerry and Irish sportsman who broke the 4 minute mile on no less than 15 or 16 occasions, would you believe? Frank, you got a scholarship then to Providence College in America. How did that come about? How does a fella get a scholarship?
Yeah, it's a good question. At the time in Ireland, you know, there was a lot of recruitment of the talent out of Ireland, you know, so there was big colleges like Villanova, which were run by Marty Stern at the time. Eamon Coughlin had gone there. Ronnie Delaney had gone there. There was Providence College, which was then run by Ray Tracy, John Tracy's brother. And John was still present in Providence. And there was the likes of Arkansas, which was run by John O'Donnell from Cross Malina County Mayo, one of the greatest cross-country teams in the country, in the US at the time. And so Ireland became a recruiting ground for US coaches, and particularly coaches who had a long affinity with Ireland. So, you know, I was winning All-Ireland titles. I'd won the schools. I had, you know, so I was on the radar. So I was recruited by Villanova and by Providence, but my preference was to go to Providence because it had a good reputation at the time for middle to long distance runners. We ended up changing that. We turned it into a milers club. And I was probably, I led that at the time. But you know, Ray Tracy had recruited me, and I got in very short notice the first year. I was just 17 when I got it, and I decided to forego for a year. And so I stayed on in Killoglan at the intermediate school and waited to go out until I was 18. And so going to college was absolutely fantastic. I was actually a week late going out because I had a competition for Ireland in Wales, and got out. Class was just beginning. Normally, they had done an orienteering course, and it's funny when you look back on things, but I used to get lost on campus the first couple of days. Now it's so small you couldn't.
Where is this situated, by the way?
Providence is the capital of Rhode Island. It's the smallest state in the US. It's about the size of Cork. It's situated 52 miles south of Boston, so it's right close to Logan Airport. And I think a lot of people confuse it with Long Island, part of New York, but no, it's one of the New England states, the six states in New England. And it's you know, rolling hills. The Providence College itself was in the city of Providence. It was an old mill town. Very close by was the start of the Industrial Revolution in the US, a place called Slater Mill in Pawtucket. And so there was a great tradition of Irish athletes coming out of Providence. We had the likes of Mick O'Shea, John Tracy, Brendan Quinn. There was Geraldine Nolan, Geraldine Hendrickson, Anita Philpott, who was one of Sonia O'Sullivan's top competitors on the age. So some fantastic. Mark Carroll went there, of course, the Irish record holder for 5,000 metres, one of the top white runners in the world ever, one of the greatest talents out of Ireland ever from County Cork. And so, yeah, some great talent out there.
But your first year, Frank, nearly ended in tragedy because you had a terrible experience and you became very seriously ill, didn't you?
Yeah, it was February. So I went out in September. I came back for Christmas and then went back out, and I was very, very fit. And I won my first couple of indoor miles. And so the season had started off well. And then in early February, we were studying for some exams the next day. I think there were maths exams. And I just got very, very sick. I thought it was a flu. And I developed spinal meningitis, and it just came on very, very rapidly. I got meningococcal septicemia, so I broke out in a rash, and I developed a temperature. I think my doctor said it was about 105.8, you know, so very, very ill. They expected me to not survive it. And I think they put it down to the fact that I was extremely fit, that they said that that's what got me through the illness. But I had two doctors, Italian-Americans, Dr. Ferry and Dr. Severotti, and they recognised it straight away because the illness had actually set in and it had advanced to quite a stage where the spinal fluids were already highly infected. I had broken out in a rash. And so when they got me to hospital, all I remember is they put me on a wheelchair, bringing me up, a priest coming in, giving me last rites. And then it was a week later, you know, I woke up and I had severe burning on the skin from the septicemia. But I was very, very lucky. You know, I had no limb damage, nerve damage. I was 6 weeks in the hospital.
Did your parents travel over?
No, and it was one of the things I kind of didn't want because, you know, it's difficult. You know, we had a great group in Providence. I think, you know, when I came out of when I came back to consciousness, I had probably every night 14, 15, 20 people in the bedroom every night. So there was great support there. There was guys like Charlie Brady, who was one of the big organisers of one of Ireland's biggest cross-country races every year, who was a huge supporter. It's a lot of the priests out of Providence College. Providence was a Dominican college, so some of them came down every day. But no, I had great support. And the thing at the time was, I remember being on when I went into hospital, saying to the doctor, I have a competition in Syracuse on the weekend. He says, I don't think you'll be going this weekend. But so that was my only focus. I woke up a week later. And
Long, Frank, did it take you then to get back into running mode? And you came home for your summer holidays, and I think you caused a big stir in Cork.
Yeah, I mean, I came back running. I was got sick in the second, I think it was 11th of February. And then it was the 6 weeks later, it was into March. I started back jogging slowly in the indoor track in Providence in April. I remember bumping into John Tracy one day, and John called me Lazarus. I came back from the dead. So, but that summer, I came back running very gently, and I managed to win a mile down in Cork. I think around about 4:07, 4:08 for the mile. But I was still very, very weak. And it took really until November, until all of the strength came back. And there was 1 week in November where the strength just poured in, and it was the most unusual phenomenon I'd ever experienced, because it was like somebody had injected all the strength. I would find in my runs that suddenly I had power again. It was like the power had gone, and it all just flowed back, and it lasted for a week, and it just flowed back into me, and that was it. I was healed. I was back. My strength was back. And then from there, I came home again that Christmas, and I trained. And when I came home and trained...
what year are we talking about?
This was the end of 1987. Yeah. So it was coming into Olympic year for 1988. So I felt, you know, I think I'm ready. I came home, I trained twice a day, 4 days a week. So I was training 10, 11 times a week. Wouldn't go out, and was diligent. You know, the training was very set. I was organized, did good mileage, did certain levels of speed sessions. And went back to Providence in early January, and we had some competitions lined up, and that was the first time I began competing now, where I was ready to...
Take on the world. Now, talk about taking on the world. One of the best runners in the world, Peter Ronnell, was around your time that time. He was reputed to be unbeatable, and he was going to go along, correct me if I'm wrong, and win an Olympic medal. But he couldn't get the better of the Kerry man.
Yeah, I mean, Peter and I turned out to be good friends. I mean, Peter had a coach down in Kenya, and there was a couple of them. There was Peter Rono, and there was a couple of brothers, the Chariot brothers, also Kenyan, who were coached by an Irish priest, Colm O'Connell. I think he's out of Mallow, but he was based in Kenya. And so I got to know the three boys very, very well. But we would compete indoors at different events at Madison Square Gardens. I was competing in the mile. I ran 4 minutes, but Chariot beat me in about 3:58. But I beat Rono, who ran 4:02 for the mile. So we're 2 seconds apart, each of us. And I raced Peter many times at US National Championships. Peter beat me once, I think. And one of the jokes later that year was that I had missed the Olympic qualifying time by about one place in 1 second. Yeah. And once you race indoors, it's always very hard to again race well outdoors. But Peter won the Olympics, and we remember thinking, oh my God, we should have been there, because he qualified pretty much the same way I would have qualified. But he got on the Kenyan team, and he won the Olympics. But running indoors, I mean, when I came back, going back to just when I came back in January after being home in Ireland, that was the first time I broke 4 minutes to the mile. And that was absolutely fantastic, because it then gave me a sense to say, well, look, lots of things are possible. Now we've got to channel the energy. And that was the first season back. That was Olympic year, and it began to go well then at that stage. You know, that was the first taste of running sub four. When you break sub four, I think as well, it just convinces your own mind that you were right all along. The training is working, and it's a great boost, you know. And I broke 4 minutes of the mile almost the day of being sick, you know, with meningitis.
Now, staying with the Olympics, Frank, you were wanted to join the great Kerry Olympians like Tom O'Riordan and Gerry Kiernan, and of later years, of course, you have the likes of Gillian O'Sullivan, and then you have our great oarsmen, Sean Casey and Cathal Moynihan, and Paul Griffin, all great Olympians. Where were the Olympics held now? You were aiming for the Olympics, and how disappointing was it not to qualify for the Olympics?
Yeah, the Olympics that year were held in Seoul. So really, the times I was running that year were thereabouts to go to the Olympic Games. We also had in Ireland, I think that year I was ranked seventh in the world indoors for the mile, but I would have been third or fourth only in Munster. That's how competitive Ireland was at the time. It was a fantastic level of competition. And so in one respect, you don't think of these levels, but I would have then gone on to compete, you know, all over Europe that summer, chasing different times. But it wasn't just a matter of qualifying on the time. I was thereabouts in the time itself, but there was then competing on the, you know, against other great athletes in Ireland. So you'd like some Marcus O'Sullivan, Frank O'Mara, Paul O'Donovan. There were some fantastic athletes as well.
Frank, it's an amazing statistic that you were the seventh fastest in the indoor mile in the world, but you were only the third fastest in Munster, not in Ireland now. Who were the people in front of you, by the way?
There was, I think, in Munster, we had Marcus O'Sullivan, who went on to win the World Indoor Championships. We had Frank O'Mara, another great talent. I think in the international level, who else? I think there was a guy by the name of Joe Falcon out of the US who went on to win the Dream Mile in Oslo. And there was Saeed Owiese, one of the world's greatest ever athletes, middle distance guys. So, and again, we were all competing at the same level. So once you're at that level, and I think Peter Rowan proved this point, you know, at that level, there is no guarantee of outright victory once you've crossed the line. And Peter Rowan crossed the line before everybody else, even though everybody else would have thought, well, he should have been probably last, if anything. But he proved the point that
on the day. Like Ronnie Delaney in 56?
Like Ronnie Delaney in 56. It is anybody's title, but it's who believes in it more, who wants it more, often is the case. There are other nuances, like injuries and niggles and so forth leading up to it, but I think being on the day, making the Olympic final, it can be anybody's title.
By the way, travelling all over America and Ireland and travelling the world, did you come across, when the race would be finished or before race, did you come across Kerry people? Would a Kerry man come up to you and say, how are things back in Dukes?
Often in the Melrose Games, it often happened. You know, you would get somebody who would come up to you and say, I know such and such. But you would have people that would have known you were competing, and they would turn up. So often in the US, you'd find it. You know, I remember once being out in Oklahoma City and an Irishman coming up to me, and he was from County Cork and his wife was from Kerry. And they knew there was athletes coming out and they'd followed it. So, and I think at the time when we were out in Oklahoma, it was in March, and I think the city council was asking us to stay around for the St. Patrick's Day parade. But we didn't have that liberty because we were part of the college contingent.
Did your Kerryism mean a lot to you, Frank, in your life and in your career?
Oh, always. Yeah, it's always. I mean, certainly.
What did it give you?
Well, I think, you know, there's always a sense of sportsmanship. I think the biggest thing is that, you know, it does come back to the individuals that were involved in the sport. And the point I made at the very beginning is, you know, as a young person, when, you know, you've got people who believe in you, it gives you belief. And it's an important point. And it's a point that I have to keep making, is that I found a very simple story. I found I had a neighbour in Dukes one day who stopped and said to me, I think you'll be a great indoor runner. Now, this is when I was 15, 4 years before I went to college in the States, or 3 years before I went to college in the States.
A neighbour in Dukes.
Yes, and he followed the sport. And he said to me, I think you'll be a great indoor runner. And this is the type of belief. And I said, well, why do you think that? And he says, just your physique. Now, this is the person who didn't participate in sports, but who understood it. Yeah. And he was right. I had a certain physique that was conducive for indoor running. And he was on the nail with the comment.
Would it be fair to say before we go for a break that my listeners they'd be familiar with watching Eamon Coughlin running and watching him? You'd have the same build. You seem to have the same type of a build as Eamon. You'd like him, built like him. Would that be fair?
Yeah, what we often say is it's a barrel chest, I suppose, and just strong physique, you know, but not tall. And you know, Marcus O'Sullivan would have been the same.
And slim hips.
Slim enough hips, yeah. But, you know, I think what we have to do in life is, you know, once you've got a particular talent, to actually use it and to make the best of it. And, you know, not let it dominate your life either.
Yeah. We're going for a break. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Frank about what he won in America. And I can tell you, he cleaned up there for the few years he was at his peak. Frank Conway is my special guest and this special terrace talk this evening, talking about his life and times as an athlete, one of the greatest athletes to come out of Kerry and out of Ireland for that matter. Frank, at your peak in America, you were representing Providence College and you won a lot. Give us an idea of what you had won.
Good question. Well, we were based in New England, so Providence is the capital of Rhode Island. There were six states in New England, as Rhode Island, Massachusetts, Connecticut, Vermont, Maine and New Hampshire. And so in the regional, we would call that the New England Championships. I would have won the New England Championships probably a dozen more times. Then we had the East Coast Championships, which we call the IC4As. We had other conference meets as well. They would have been probably everything east of Chicago, and that was close to 200 million people, some of the best colleges in the country, some of the best colleges in the world, won those titles numerous times. And then at national level, medaled a number of times at US level, been All-American 8-9 times. And to be All-American means you've got to be top 3 or 4 athletes in a particular discipline. So overall, I think, you know, in terms of athletics in the US, ranked top 2 in the mile indoors. So yeah, I think it was a good career. I think, I mean, it was enjoyable. It was competing against very best athletes in the world, the best Brits, the best Kenyans, particularly a lot of Ethiopians. So the world's talent was concentrated in there, and a lot of athletes who came out of the US, Billy Kinsella, the Chariots, the Ronos, all went on to win Olympic championships, world titles, indoor titles, world and outdoor titles. So we competed against the top athletes in the world. And in many invitational competitions, you know, at Millrose Games, we were like the likes of Fermín Cacho coming in, who were Olympic champion in 1992, again beating them. So it was a standard of competition that was hard to replicate. And you know, the competition in the US suited a lot of athletes. Some athletes perhaps didn't always like it. We were very lucky in Providence that we didn't have a regime that was over-focused on winning team titles. And what I mean by that is in some competition, some colleges, they would over-compete their athletes. Mm-hmm. We had a good regime that way. So Ray Tracy was a very level-headed guy, fair on the athletes, and we would race maybe one or two events per weekend, and that was it. But regional, national titles, national-level competitions.
You helped Eamon Coughlin set a world record in the indoor, didn't you?
I did. It was a favour for Eamon because of great time for him. I think he's, you know, he's a true gentleman. And, you know, having known him over the years, he's one of the first guys who would always volunteer to help. Knew the athlete situations very, very well. One of the biggest-hearted athletes I know. So it was back in... I was out of college maybe 2 years, and I was fighting an injury at this stage, but I was still competing, running sub 4 minute miles. But I wasn't at my best. But Eamon said to me, would I help him out one night in New York? So I said, absolutely, I'll come down and help you out. So Eamon was going to try and break the 4 minutes to the mile at Madison Square Gardens at night. So the goal was, Madison Square Gardens is a particularly tough track to run sub 4, you know, because it was a boarded track and it was 11 laps to the mile rather than 8 minutes. Great atmosphere, best atmosphere in the world, absolutely fantastic. You know, it was the event to be at those days because the European indoor circuit hadn't really taken off like it has now.
And he was known as chairman of the boards.
Chairman of the boards, absolutely. And Eamon was now over 40, so he was competing at a unique level for a man of his age. So the goal that night was I would come down and rabbit Eamon. That was lead the pace for, I was 24 at the time. So I was out of college maybe 2 years. So it would have been 1992. And I would lead the race for 1,200 metres. So that's three quarters of the race. And the goal was to go through the first 800 metres in about 2:06, I think, 2:05. So I think I went about 2:04, but it was probably a little bit fast for Eamon. But he still got the world record at night. He beat Mike Boyd's record. Then the following year, he came back and broke the 4 minutes at Harvard. But I was back competing that year again. But that night, we got a world record for Eamon. And that was the first time he'd really given it a good shot. But I don't think it was ever possible that night to break 4 minutes per mile because the uniqueness of the track, it was 11 laps to the mile. And the rule of thumb indoors is the more laps to the mile, the slower you're going to run.
The old Kerry-Dublin rivalry was put aside that time when the Kerry men went out to help the Dublin men. Was it just before that, Frank, you suffered a very serious injury which might have had a big effect, you'll tell us, on your career? Disaster struck, as you say yourself.
Yeah, I mean, it really was the end of the career. It was one of the last competitions for college we were racing. I did have a bit of a niggle in my ankle. And I think one of the issues I had, which I probably, I suspect would be corrected now, is I have a very high arch. And one of the problems with a high arched foot is it creates a particular level of stress on both the calves and the supporting ligaments. But I had an injury, a slight niggle going down racing in down to New York at the US Regional Championships. Now, we were expected to win it as a club, as a team championship for Providence, which we did win. But I ruptured a ligament on the outside ankle. It was only, I think, 2 years later before we actually fully discovered, and I'd graduated from college by this stage, what had actually happened. But what ended up then resulting because of that particular injury was with the ball of the ankle began to rub on the surrounding bone, and it created friction within the ankle itself. So what it meant was I couldn't get into spikes to train on a consistent level at the level you needed to be at that type of competition. And so it began a slow demise where I couldn't compete at that level, couldn't train at the particular intense level that I needed to be competing at. I could still run sub 4 minutes for the mile any day of the week, but I couldn't get down to the 350 levels, which is where I needed to be to run and perhaps look at medaling at international competition. And so as I graduated from college, that was a particularly tough year and a half because I decided by the following summer. So the injury happened in October of 89, and I was graduating in May of 90. And I'd made a decision. I said, I can give 2 years to this, but I need to, you know, go on to the other parts of my life that are also important. And that is, you know, I'm getting an education, I need to use it, and I'm going to go back and do my master's. And so while I went back to do my master's at Providence, I was still training, and training very, very well. I was doing certain road races, indoor miles, and those were going particularly well. I had some very good five-mile road races, one in Connecticut, where I think we ran about 21 and a half minutes, which was record pace. And so I was incredibly strong. I reckoned I was probably ready to run about 3:52 for the mile indoors, but the injury came back again, and it kept coming back. And so you begin to suspect that this is something that isn't going to go away. And so I had decided at the time that I can give this 2 years. I was getting ready for the 1992 Olympics in Barcelona. And I certainly think that the training was going the way we wanted. I had a very good coach at the time, out of college now, Jim Harvey from the US, but I was in very close contact with Spig Navori. Well, still, he was still a mentor of mine. And, you know, by the time you get to 22, 23, 24, you don't need coaches anymore. You just need mentors because you've learned all of the real technique of running. You know, you need somebody to observe. But the injury just didn't go away.
What year was this?
This was now rolling into 1992, 2 years after graduating. But so the college career ended up on an injury. And yeah. So I wasn't competing. We had done an operation on it. The surgeons had gone in and done arthroscopic surgery on the joint of the ankle. But what they missed at the time was that it was a very simple thing in the end. I now run every day, but it probably orthotics would have probably helped and some light repair to the actual tendon itself. But it was missed at the time. And then we had physiotherapists in college, which weren't great. You know, they were probably more looking for the bigger career and using college as a sport.
Were you still hoping to qualify for the Olympics?
Oh, absolutely, yes. I mean, then we were training. Once I left...
How close did you go to that?
I think it was always within a second or two of getting the qualifying time. But now, by the time I got to 1992, the recurring injury just simply wasn't healing. And so while I was still competing and competing very, very well, I would typically find that, you know, one of the things you do in athletics is that you need to be on the track doing speed work from March onwards.
So, Frank, if I could ask you a hypothetical question. You said that you had this injury, serious injury, it was affecting your training, but you were still running sub 4 minute miles.
Yes.
Now, it appears to me that if you hadn't got that injury, it appears to me that you never reached your peak. What would Frank Conway's peak have been? What were you capable of, hypothetically, if you hadn't got the injury? Looking back now, speaking honestly.
Oh, well, I think if you take the mile time I ran indoors, the fastest mile I ran was 3:56 for the mile. And that was a rule of thumb. Normally for outdoor miles, you would say we'll take 3 seconds off that. So that would have been, say, a 3:53 mile. And that was when I was only 21, 22. You don't peak until you're 24, 25. I think there was perhaps a 3:50, 3:49 mile perhaps in there somewhere. And this would have been pretty much the opinion of the coaches I was with as well, just purely on a mathematical basis, just looking at how I was competing, how I was racing. I was running about 1:47 for 800 metres, which is one of the fastest. I've run, you know, 2 minutes and 20 seconds, which was one of the all-time fastest 1,000 metres in Ireland ever, off very little speed work. So all of the ingredients for the talent were there, but the issue for me was getting that consistency in training was becoming more and more impossible.
Of course, yeah.
So I think, you know, a lot of guys I know were running about 3:50 for the mile, which would have been in my level. So I think that would have been a fair assessment of it.
In relation to the Olympics, Frank, what would you have liked distance? Would you have liked to run in the Olympics? And were you capable of winning a medal on the day?
No, I don't think winning a medal, no. I think, to be fair, that level of competition, I think where my particular strength would have been indoor 3,000 metres. I think that's where I would have been particularly strong. And, you know, the sport has now evolved. I suppose the Olympics is still kind of the focal point, but athletics is now specialised as well. I think what I was particularly strong was 3,000 metres indoors, mile indoors, and European level. World Championships is one of the most particularly tough, but you know, I suppose you like to always think that, you know, if my old good friend Peter Onner was able to win the Olympics running roughly the same standards and times I was, that, you know, was there a medal there? That's a difficult one, you know, and that would be unfair to every athlete out there to say that. But certainly competing and making a final was always one of the objectives. Although I always had a rule, I would say that you can't give up the rest of your life for the sport either. You must, you know, when I was 21, 22, 23, everything could go into the sport. But once I got to the age of 27, 28, I would say you must make sure that if you're going to give this much sacrifice, you must have a real prospect of a medal.
Well, when we come back, we're going to find out what happened for the rest of that life and where did Frank go after that and what's he at now. And, of course, he's deeply involved in athletics and Kerry at the moment. We'll also talk about that. You're very welcome back to the programme. I'm talking to Frank Conway, one of Kerry's great, I suppose you could say in many ways, forgotten great sports people. Might be a very harsh thing to say, but however, he's been interviewed for the first time about his life and times. Frank, when did you run last then? When did your career really come to an end and where did life take you? Because you were left college at this stage, you were gone into banking.
Yeah, I ran a number of competitions up until 1993. So I'd given 2 years, I extended another year. So I'd run some regional championships in New England. I was still running fairly close, like to 4 minute mile. And then, you know, I began to sense that, you know, life needed to take a new direction. I certainly wasn't going to be able to do it at the level of international competition. And these are always the careful decisions you got to make. I think I made it one day and I said, this isn't just going to happen. Jim Harvey and I had a long discussion and I said, Jim, you know, I mean, I've absolutely loved the sport. I've done a lot of things. I've met a lot of people. I've beaten a lot of people. I've run a lot of good times. I certainly haven't gotten close to the level I think I can compete at. But I can't sacrifice the rest of my life trying to chase that either, because it probably would be wrong to turn the sport into this almost course, if you wanted, this cross on your back. It has to be fun. It has to be easy. And while it's fun, it makes it very, very easy. And this is not to say that we didn't train very, very hard. We did. But you must enjoy the sport. But if you go into a race wondering if your injury is going to come back, then it's gotten a different dimension. The fun has gone out of it. So 1993 was the last time I competed. And that was a local track race in New England. I mean, still some very good athletes coming in for that. But I ran that race and I came off it. It was actually, it was an indoor race. I ran 3:59 for the mile. I won it. But I cooled down afterwards, actually up in Boston University. And I remember cooling down afterwards and Jim Harvey saying to me, he said, God, you look really strong there. And it took me about an hour to come up the courage to say to him, Jim, the injury's back. You know, it's just not going away. And he was dumbfounded. He says, and you ran the race with the injury? And I said, yeah. I said, about 800 metres into it, I felt it coming back again. And Jim said, well, he said, what do you want to do? And I said, well, I don't think that we're going to get to that level now. I think, you know, it's beginning to slip away. It was 24.
Were you depressed, Frank, with this injury, lurking there and coming back all the time? I would imagine that you were down in the dumps for a bit.
No, not at all. I mean, I had my sights and because I was working in banking by this stage. I'd taken a job and I was working part-time. So, you know, I had the offer at work to go full-time and to move on. So, no, not at all. I think I'm lucky enough to have a different philosophy in the sense that, you know, life is full of chapters. And I probably took this philosophy on after having meningitis, and I really believe in this. It's got a series of different chapters, and you must move on to the next one. You know, you might have liked the last one, but the next one can be equally interesting. And if life is a good story, and it's like reading a good book, it's a really great book, has really great chapters. So no, I was ready to move on. I was realistic about it. I knew that, you know, we're not going to get to the Olympic titles. And while it was extremely important when I was 17, by the time we get to 24, other parts of your life must also be important.
At the height of your fame, Frank, coming home to Kerry on holidays, coming home to Dukes, and meeting people, were you recognised as a great world athlete by Kerry people? Did you get any sports star awards talk to us about that.
I don't remember if I got, that's a good question. I don't actually remember if I got sports star award.
Yeah.
I actually don't know. I think the running community certainly recognised it, absolutely. I mean, in Providence, you know, in the US, I was, you know, nominated as Athlete of the Year, which is only two athletes that get this. So they're certainly recognised in the US side of things. But I'm not sure in Ireland. I think, you know, the sport of athletics is its own sport. I think, you know, it perhaps goes through ups and downs. I think now we've got perhaps the possibility of resurgence of some great talents. But no, I wouldn't have been into the awards and such. So my the level I was competing at, you know, I was you know, the rewards were often when you met the likes of Orwell, it was back to analysing the results. So the awards didn't matter. Your awards really were competing against athletes and beating them.
That the reason why I'm asking you this now, Frank, is because we say, for instance, Ty Kenealy's out in Australia now. You'd hear him there on local radio. They're ringing him up and people are reporting about him. The Kerry men and the local newspapers, The Kingdom, The Kerry's Eye, are reporting about how he's getting on and interviewing him. Were there people following Frank Conway that time from Kerry? And were they following your career here? I'm trying to get a handle now about you were a world star and how was it perceived at home here in Kerry?
I would say not. I mean, certainly not at the parish level. No, I wouldn't think that. I think at the national level, yes. I mean, certainly the likes of Tom O'Riordan certainly gave very good coverage, and Tom had written some very good articles at the time. I remember he was... he'd written some very positive articles. Brendan Mooney from the Cork Examiner certainly would have called all the time. So I think the national level was very, very good.
Yeah.
But I think maybe there's always maybe a disconnect as well at the local level, because I ran for Ivra, and so it was Carsevine Club because it was the only club that was there at the time. But I will say one thing. My local community was very supportive of me, because I remember a couple of times they would have put on one or two functions when I was going to the US. So in terms of the local community, yes, great support. I had fantastic supporters in the area who wanted me to do well. Absolutely. I think from the more the local sporting groups, I think it maybe didn't exist as much. But that's not to say, you know, what I mean by that is that the structures weren't there. And I think, you know, the awards weren't anything to me. I probably didn't even know they existed, to be honest.
So when did you decide to leave America and come back to Ireland, and where are you now?
Oh, well, I spent 18 years in the US. So I went into banking. Eventually became one of the directors in the bank. I worked for responsibility for marketing. So, you know, we marketed right across the US. We did home equity products, savings products, business commercial products. So I became a banker. Yeah, and, you know, I mean, certainly when I came back here in 2004, when I got after it, we'd been married a number of years, my wife had to return back to home, and so did I. You know, it was time to move back. So took a job with a company in Dublin, Financial Services, Irish Mortgage Corporation, and I'm one of the directors there. And so we've a range of different services. I think we've six different different companies. Most of them I've set up. And so I've been based between Kerry and Dublin for the last 5 or 6 years. My home is Kerry. It always has been. And we spend a lot of time down here, but my work happens to be in Dublin. But I've become involved now with Kerry Athletics.
Now, Frank has become involved with Kerry Athletics in a big way. There are some great young stars coming up in the county. When we come back, we're going to be talking about the situation in Kerry today and those great young stars that are coming through. And we'll also be talking about Castle Island and the great facilities they have over there. Big change from Frank's time when he was growing up. And like Tom O'Riordan told me one time, Tom told me that he was training on top of a ditch, barefoot, running across an open ditch, training for the Olympics. Can you believe it? Big changes. Frank, like all great Kerry sports people in all sports, and you've been one of them, you're back now, you come down to Kerry periodically and you're involved in coaching great young Kerry athletes, and there's a lot of great work going on. Of course, over in Castle Island, we have a great running track over there now, great facilities. Talk to us about what you're doing now and how you got involved in the Kerry setup.
Yeah, it's Gerry Horgan out of Killoglan. He's a very good friend of mine. I've known Gerry since I was 12, 13. Gerry was right there, right throughout the school's years, and great helper, great supporter. And so for the last couple of years, Gerry has been toying with the idea of putting a more formal structure in place in Kerry for the high-performance athletes. High-performance athletes are athletes who have medalled or placed well at Munster or All-Ireland level. And this would be for sprinters, for middle distance, for athletes, 5,000 metres, 10,000 metres, steeplechase. And so I've taken on the role in mentoring. Now, there were some very good coaches in Kerry. But so what I've said is, if I can help in giving some advice to younger athletes, I'll do that. So what I'm doing at the moment is I'm mentoring a group of athletes. Now, we did a session yesterday over in Castle Island, a fantastic facilities over there. And we had about, I think, 20, 25 athletes turn up yesterday for a speed session. We call it a fartlek session, where we're coaching them. Now, the whole point in this is to teach the technique of running to athletes, to show them a structure in improving their performance. And one of the things that is very important is that every day has a particular type of structure, but overall throughout the year there is the concept of goal setting. And in athletics, I always say that there are three things. There is ABC. There is the ability of the athlete. You're born with that. Some people are lucky to be born with lots and lots of ability. There is the belief of the athlete, and this is key at international or any competition, that you can believe that you can win this. If you've got the ability, you must believe you can win it. And there is the commitment. And without the commitment to training, that athlete won't reach their full potential. Many other ingredients as well. But if you can teach the three primary ABCs to the athletes, and this is what we're doing. So yesterday we did a speed session, which we call a fartlek session, which is as much psychological as it is physical, teaching the athletes to learn to run with what we call speed play. And there were some real good young talents coming up there. And what I'm working with is there is a guy by the name of Shane Delaney who has put a huge effort into Kerry Athletics. And I must absolutely applaud them for their approach to athletics. My role will be in mentoring the athletes, not to coach them. But if I can coach them, I'd certainly give as much advice as I can, because they've got coaches. But show them how it's done. And this is how it's done at international level. This is what a young athlete will need to prepare for. So we're not going to be doing the real heavy athletics, but we are going to train these young athletes into preparing for a race and believing that they can perform well. One of the things when I was younger, I remember one day one local farmer saying to me, "I don't see how you can win the All-Ireland. Sure, there's great athletes out there." And I said, "No, I'm going to win. I'm going to win the All-Ireland next week." And I was 15 or 16. I had true belief. But I was born with that. And then I had other coaches that were helping me. So it's a combination effort. And I must say that Kerry now is the best county in Ireland for cross country.
Frank, that's a huge statement.
Yeah, yeah. There is a fantastic number of young athletes coming up. And what I'd like to do, if it's, you know, just to say some of the athletes that I met yesterday, is just go through some very talented young athletes from the middle distance that I saw yesterday. And I'd start off by saying young Liam O'Connell, Conor O'Mahony, Niamh O'Sullivan, Jack O'Sullivan, Kevin O'Donoghue, Bridget Dennehy from Cara Sabine, my old club, Eva Ra, Niamh O'Hora, who works with Gerry Horgan, Mary Fitzgerald, Aidan Burns, Aaron Quigley, David O'Keefe, Rachel Hawker from Kinmare, very talented young athlete, I think. Katie Rogers, Tyg Moore, Killian O'Donovan from Cara Sabine, a very talented young fellow who I think is one fellow to watch.
He's a nephew of the great Maurice Fitzgerald, I think.
That's right, yeah, and I just saw him yesterday competing and just a true, pure, raw talent, absolutely. So he's got the God gift of talent.
The apple never falls off from the tree there, the blood is thicker than water, Frank.
Isn't that so true? Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, so many cases of that, but now it's all of our jobs to help to encourage, not one person, but if I can show it on the running side of it, there are some great physiotherapists out there. We're going to be doing a lot of work. There's one other athlete, which is David Hogan. So some
is
very
this, Frank, is this a whole new setup in Kerry now? And this has never been here before, as far as I know, anyway. And when was all this organised and who's behind it?
Well, who's behind it is it's kerryathletics.com. So all of the information is on the website. It's www.kerryathletics.com. There's a blog on the website as well. Shane Delaney is behind and Gerry Horgan and a lot of other very committed people are behind it. So it's the first time it's been done at this type of structure in Kerry, where we're now giving the information, doing the coaching sessions with the athletes. We do the coaching sessions up in Castle Island, the track there.
How are they responding, Frank, when you're talking to those young kids there now? Can you see yourself in them?
Yeah, I think they are responding with an absolute level of enthusiasm, which is truly encouraging. You know, and when I see that level of encouragement, I have no difficulty coming to coaching the athletes and committing. And yesterday we had 20 or 30 young athletes on the track, all competing and all listening and all taking in what you're telling them. And there was one or two of the athletes who were slightly shorter distance. But what we're teaching them is that you need to build strength with the athletes, prepare them for the season, teaching them how to stretch. One of the things I would have said yesterday, you never stretch on a cold, wet piece of ground. We'll do it indoors. The facilities there, showing them how to stretch, teaching the principles of stretching. The principles of stretching are always that it improves your performance 10, 15, 20, 25%. Very simple stuff. So all of these simple techniques, you know, doing core strength training. I've done a guide now, which is the high performance guide for the athletes, and I've given it out to the groups themselves. I really want to be something that the coaches can recommend or look back on or get information from or certainly call me on. But this is all of the work that I would have done myself, and it's 25 pages long. It's got a lot of core strength training techniques in there. And so it's now giving back that knowledge. But I got knowledge, you know, from one of the best coaches in the world, Spigniew Oriwa. And it turns out that Spigniew now has had a role with Irish rugby over the last number of years because his scientific approach to athletics has been absolutely phenomenal.
And of course, we mentioned there, and rightly so, about the facilities in Castle Island. Now, you've travelled the whole world and you've run in some of the best places. This is superb, isn't it? And it's a credit to all those people who are behind it. Great friend of mine, Dennis McSweeney, and is one of the men behind it.
Well, Dennis
and the Welsh brothers.
Dennis and the Welsh brothers have done a fantastic job. And let me say that, you know, some of the wealthiest colleges in the US, one of the wealthiest college in the US is Harvard University. And what I saw and what I see over in Castle Island is on par with that. It's got all the training facilities, all the indoor exercise facilities, and obviously the track itself. So it's on par with anything in the world. These are people with vision. They've put the physical structure in place. And all I'd like to think is now that I can play my small part in giving something back to the athletes themselves, because the talent is absolutely there. You know, when I see young athletes that turn up on the 2nd of January on a Sunday when they could be doing other things and that are driving from Dingle, from Kinmare to Castle Island, there is a commitment there. There's a commitment on the part of the parents, but more so, there's a commitment on the part of the athletes. And all of them yesterday took on board what I said and they did what I asked them to do. We didn't have a crazy session, but we had a very tough session and they did it and they listened. and we had a chat before, and then we had a lecture afterwards, and they take on board, and then they come back with questions. So there is a commitment and a learning, a need, a want to learn there. So with the talent, you know, it's absolutely in the county.
Of course, there's great raw talent in Kerry, Frank, and Kerry would be renowned for all sports, because I mentioned already to you about the three oarsmen who represented Ireland in the Olympics. Who think that that would have happened? But they're from Kerry, and they have this terrible raw, cruel kind of tunnel vision talent. Yeah. And that would be there in the athletics, wouldn't it?
Oh, the county is absolutely flooded with talent. I have absolutely no doubt about that.
They need guidance.
It is guidance, yes. And, you know, in my own experience, when I was growing up, I can go through any number of athletes. I will mention Mike Cahill from Rossbay, who was underage, an incredibly talented athlete, you know. But you need the combination of the commitment, the facilities. I probably was a little bit, I remember when I was 16, 17, hitchhiking to and from Navan to meet my coach, you know. I think once it took me 14 lifts to get home. Another time it took me 3 lifts to get home back down to Kerry. That's how committed I was. I remember making my own steeplechase hurdles. A neighbour of mine had a welding machine, and we made them, and they're still down in Dukes. I remember everything I was told. I was a sponge waiting for knowledge.
Did you ever meet Mick Murphy, the great cyclist, the Iron Man?
No, I never met Mick. No, I never had the pleasure of meeting Mick.
Pleasure is the word,
But fantastic talent. But the facilities are absolutely key. But the talent has always been there.
And the facilities are there now.
The facilities are there. The final ingredient in all of this is, I think, what the likes of Shane are doing and Jerry Horgan are doing is they're now tapping into the resource of knowledge. They're tapping into people who've had experience and who can come back and give advice and guidance to the athletes themselves. And I'm delighted they asked me. I'm delighted to be able to help. And I enjoy it. And I particularly enjoy it because, you know, I remember being back in Providence a couple of months ago and saying it to a good coaching friend of mine. And he said, you'll know in the first couple of sessions whether you're going to get something back out of this, because you'll see it in the athlete's eyes, you listen to them, and you see if they're committed to it. And he said, you know what, if they are committed to it, you'll get no greater pleasure out of it.
A great Kerry lady working with you, Frieda Davran, and a great Breda, yes. Barrett, of course, a great, yes, friend of mine, a great friend of Terrace Talk, and the late Timmy Griffin. I'd like to mention Timmy Griffin from Tralee, who was deeply involved in athletics all his life. Great people. Frank, before we finish up, what was the highlight of your career?
Oh, God, the highlight of my career. Yeah. I think...
Don't say no to me, that's a tough one.
No, I was an indoor runner, and I must say that I think winning at Madison Square Gardens, running sub-4 the first time was an absolute highlight, because we used to have a great group of people up at Harvard. And I think winning at Madison Square Gardens one night, my own mile there, it was fantastic. It's just a special place. You know, it was my event. I was racing Peter Rono that night. Ran 4 minutes for the mile on the boards there, which is a difficult enough track. But the crowd there were fantastic, you know, because what they allow you to do then is do 2 laps of honour. They turn out all the lights and they put the spotlight on you. And so I said, I'm going to enjoy this. It's a bit of fun. But there were many other ones.
Outside of Peter Rono, who was the best athlete you beat?
Oh, there were so many. I mean, beat Sebastian Coe. I've beaten John Walker, pipped me in the line in Dublin on 1988 in a mile. Who else? I mean, there were other athletes I've beaten, but it would be unfair to say I beat them because I didn't beat them at their peak. But at their close to their peak, you know, the likes of Coe, Ovest, Steve Ovest, Peter Rono, Charles Chariot, Joe Falcon from the US, many of the...
Regrets?
Regrets. I actually have no regrets. I absolutely love what life presents. Make the best of it. And I move on to the next chapter. The next chapter now is in hopefully helping the young new athletes reach their potential.
You're very fit looking, Frank. There isn't, as the fella said, there isn't a pick in you. You must be doing a lot of training all the time.
Yeah, I'm lucky enough to be able to train now. I figured out one way of keeping injuries at bay. It's a couple of very simple exercises I use. And I've shaped a piece of wood like a massage thumb, and I keep 2 potentially serious injuries at bay all of the time. I'm able to run 11, 12 miles on a Sunday. I'm able to do 8, 9 miles a night. I usually run four or five times a week. We usually take a day off a week. Now, the last 2 weeks have been very difficult because of the snow, and I have a rule of thumb. If it's too dangerous to run, I don't run because it could bring on injury. And if I'm sick, I had a head cold, I don't run. So now that the weather has cleared up and water is back, it's now easier to go back. But my rule of thumb is to train 5-6 times a week. Yeah. So I try to stay fit. And the one thing is when I run with the athletes, you know, the younger athletes now in Castle Island, I teach them how to jog. Because very often they're young buckers and they want to go and they want to prove. I teach them how to jog, I teach them how to run, and I teach them how to believe and use a strategy.
That's guidance, Frank. That's the old experience, and they need that. Now, we're sitting here in front of a blazing fire under a lovely, beautiful, lit Christmas tree. We're looking out on a beautiful landscape, and we're here. This is a real Radio Kerry setup because it's Ger O'Connor of Radio Kerry, the broadcaster. We're in his home back here in Dukes. It was he who is a great friend of yours who has so kindly set up this interview for him. And he's plying us with kindness, of course, between soup and between yes. and between buns and cake and everything. So I want to thank Ger O'Connor sincerely and his family for setting all this up. Ger and yourself are good friends.
Oh, yeah. Well, Ger and I went to school together. And, I've known Ger since I was only a young bucko growing up in Kerry. And Ger was always a great supporter as well. I think Ger always took great pleasure out in watching me run and run well. He used to write to me when I was in college, of course, as well, before the days of email. Hasn't life progressed since then? Yeah. But yeah, absolutely. Ger is a neighbour of mine. He's one of the best neighbours around. He has been a great supporter and a long-time friend.
Lovely. Well done. Finally, finish up. I want to present you with this the Captain Story, Secrets of Kerry. It's a DVD on Kerry captains that a special friend of yours, a great runner, Christy Reardon of CR Videos Castlevine, we've been working on it for, and it has got rave reviews. And enjoy it. It's a four-hour DVD. Enjoy it. And behind it all was Christy Reardon, who himself won All-Ireland Championships. Would he have run against you?
Christy and I were long-time teammates, won many medals together. There was myself, Christy, Patrick O'Shea, all under the tutelage of Lorcan Murphy. So we had a great group back then. Certainly, Christy has gone on to do many great things as well. And Patrick has gone on to do many great things. He has been a fantastic ambassador for the sport, Patrick O'Shea. And, I certainly hope that, you know, we continue to give something back. Everybody is giving something back, and I think that's important. But certainly, you know, one of the things I'd have to say is that, the people like, you know, the Lorcan Murphys of the world, the Dennehys, the Walsh brothers, all of those, the Griffins and Trulli, all of those gentlemen have done a fantastic service for sport in general, not just athletics. They've brought out talent, they've encouraged talent, and they've gotten some great results over the year, and long may it continue. The talent is in the county. We hope we can encourage it.
So Frank Conway, the fastest Kerry miler of all time. Thanks for joining me in conversation on Terrace Talk. And listen to me, you had a fabulous career and you have written yourself into the history books one way or the other. There's no doubt at all about it. Yourself and Gerry Kiernan are the only two sub-4 minute Kerry men. And you stand above everyone else as the fastest sub-4 minute miler that this county has ever produced. Frank, it was lovely talking to you and good health to you and your wife. Give her my regards. And we're thinking about her brother or her father, of course, Jimmy Redpath, who was a great friend of mine. Lord, merci.
Thank you very much. It's been an absolute pleasure.